You're listening to ESL Podcast English Cafe, number 561. This is English as a Second Language Podcast, English Cafe, episode 561. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, coming to you from the Center for Educational Development in beautiful Los Angeles, California. Visit our website at ESLPOD.com, where you'll find some excellent courses in American English for both business and daily English. If you're on Facebook, then you definitely have to like us. Go to Facebook.com/ESLPOD. And you can follow us on Twitter at ESLPOD. On this cafe, we're going to talk about something called the Comstock Lode and Silver Rush, one of the most important events of the late 19th century, especially for those of us who live in the western United States. We're also going to talk about a classic television show from the 20th century, which, in a way, is sort of related to the first topic. The show was called The Beverly Hillbillies. And as always, we'll answer a few of your questions. Let's get started. A lode, L-O-D-E, is an area of metal ore that is found in the earth. It is sometimes referred to as a vein, V-E-I-N, of metal ore. When I say metal ore, I'm referring to metals such as silver and gold, which are found in the ground, which could be a hill or a mountain or some other area. A lode, then, is a large amount of metal ore that is found in a certain area. Comstock, C-O-M-S-T-O-C-K, is the name of a man who owned land in the state of Nevada, or what is now the state of Nevada. The Comstock Lode, then, refers to silver that was first found on land owned by a man named Comstock in what was then the territory of Nevada. A territory, T-E-R-R-I-T-O-R-Y, here is used as a legal term to describe land that is owned by a country, but is not yet officially one of the states or provinces of that country. As the United States was growing in size, it began to take some of the land that it owned, the territories that it owned, and make them into states. There are still territories of the United States, areas that belong to the country of the United States that are not yet states, places such as Puerto Rico, Guam, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. All of those legally are considered U.S. territories, but they're not states. Well, most of the United States started out as territories that were eventually made into states, or parts of which were made into states. Back in June of 1859, right before the American Civil War, silver was discovered in Nevada, in the territory of Nevada, on land owned by Mr. Comstock. And this became known as the Comstock Lode. Silver is what's called a precious metal that is gray and white in color. You're probably familiar with both silver and another well-known precious metal, gold. Both silver and gold were discovered in the western parts of the U.S. during the 19th century. In fact, 10 years before the Comstock Lode was discovered, people were already moving to the western United States in the hopes of finding gold. Gold was discovered in California in 1849. This sudden, rapid movement of people to California in 1849 was called the Gold Rush. The verb to rush, R-U-S-H, means to move very quickly because you have a need to get somewhere quickly. The Gold Rush was a sudden movement of people to California looking for gold. Everyone wanted to become rich quickly. This, of course, is still true today. It was no less true in 1849 when people came to California looking for gold. In 1859, 10 years after the California Gold Rush, people started moving to the neighboring territory of Nevada to look not for gold, but for silver. Nevada is right next to the state of California. In fact, some of the people who came to California to find gold also moved to Nevada 10 years later to look for silver. The verb we use for looking for gold and silver is to prospect, P-R-O-S-P-E-C-T. To prospect means to search for gold and silver and other metals in the land or sometimes in the water. In California, for example, many people prospect for gold by trying to find little pieces of gold that fell into the rivers and would move through the water. Some of the people who prospected for gold in California began to prospect for gold in Nevada. But they didn't find gold. Instead, they found silver, at least in the land owned by Mr. Comstock. Word soon spread, that is, other people found out about the silver discoveries in Comstock and the Comstock Lode. And very soon after, you had what we could call a silver rush, where people moved to Nevada to mine for silver. To mine, M-I-N-E, is to dig holes in the earth looking for things such as gold and silver. We also use this verb, to mine, when we're looking for other things in the ground, including coal, C-O-A-L. Coal, of course, is burned as an energy source. Still, today, it's an important energy source in many parts of the country and around the world. Both gold and silver have been considered valuable ever since ancient times, when people realized that they could become rich by going to Nevada and mining or otherwise looking for silver, of course, they immediately did so. Unfortunately, you couldn't find a lot of silver in the Comstock Lode just by digging in the ground. You had to dig very deep into the ground in order to find the silver. You had to, in effect, create what are called tunnels, T-U-N-N-E-L-S. A tunnel is a long hole that goes underground or into a mountain. One of the problems with these tunnels is sometimes they weren't very strong, they weren't very well built, and they collapsed. To collapse, C-O-L-L-A-P-S-E, is when a structure, a building, falls down. The tunnels collapsed and killed many people who were trying to look for silver. Mining for silver then was a dangerous occupation. You could get killed doing it. Not just because the tunnels collapsed, but sometimes there would be water that would go into the tunnels, and that would kill people. Between 1859 and 1864, so many people moved to the area near the Comstock Lode in the modern state of Nevada that several new towns were created. People, of course, needed a place to live. So these towns included a place called Virginia City, which became the place where government and business affairs were taken care of. The number of people moving to the area also made it possible for the territory to meet some of the requirements that the U.S. government had for a state to be formed. The U.S. government created states out of these territories when there was a sufficient population, that is, when there were enough people who were living there. At the time, to become a state, a territory had to have more than 5,000 people there who could vote. By 1864, the population around this Comstock Lode was so great that the territory could in fact become a state. By 1869, 10 years after the discovery of the Comstock Lode, it became simply too expensive for individual people to go and mine the land. You needed new technology in order to discover and get the silver out of the ground. So you saw the formation of large mining companies that came in and began to do this work. When the railroad system that connected the east coast of the United States to the west coast of the U.S., what we call the Transcontinental Railroad, was completed in 1869, these companies were able to move or transport the silver in order to sell it in other parts of the country. The best years of the silver rush were not the early years back in 1859, 1860, but rather about 25 years later when these mining companies began to become more successful at getting the silver out of the ground. Between 1876 and 1878, nearly $36 million worth of silver was mined in the Comstock Lode area. That would be about $800 million today. Of course, no load of precious minerals is endless. Eventually, you are going to find all or most of the silver in a given area, or at least it's going to become too expensive to remove it. By 1880, less and less silver was being discovered in this area, and by the late 1880s, almost a third of the population that had moved to the Comstock Lode area had moved away because there was simply not enough silver there to keep them, to give them jobs. The Comstock Lode and the Silver Rush, similar to the Gold Rush in California, were key events in the formation of the state of Nevada and also in getting people to move out to the western United States. Of course, once there was no more silver to be discovered, Nevada had to find other ways to get people to move there, had to find other ways to make money. It wasn't until the 20th century that Nevada decided that it was going to make gambling legal. and gambling provided the major source or the biggest source of income in Nevada, especially in cities such as Las Vegas and Reno. Nowadays, when people think of the state of Nevada, they don't think of silver, they think of gambling. So instead of getting money out of Nevada, people go to Nevada to lose their money, as you will almost always do if you are gambling. We turn now to our second topic, a classic television show. The Beverly Hillbillies was a popular television show during the 1960s up through the early 1970s. To understand what this television show is about, you need to understand what a hillbilly is. A hillbilly, H-I-L-L-B-I-L-L-Y, is an uneducated person who comes usually from a rural area in the United States. Specifically, we usually associate the word hillbilly with people who live up in the mountains or hills in the eastern part of the United States, in what are called the Appalachian Mountains. The Appalachian Mountains are located in the eastern U.S. In the western United States, we have what are called the Rocky Mountains. The Appalachian Mountains are older, and because they are in the eastern part of the U.S., they have been populated much longer than the Rockies, at least by what we may describe as European Americans. Many of the people who live in the Appalachian Mountains historically have been very poor. They haven't had a lot of money. They also haven't had a lot of education, in part because they are often isolated. They are away from the big cities and towns, and therefore didn't have the same opportunities to go to school. The term hillbilly, however, is a very insulting one, or at least it's usually used as an insult. To call someone a hillbilly is to say the person is uneducated, who comes from an area that is not very sophisticated. It definitely would not be something you would want to call someone unless you were doing it as a joke. Usually, as I say, the term has been applied to those from these Appalachian Mountain communities or areas in the eastern U.S. mountain range. A more general insulting term for someone who comes from a rural area, not from a big city, would be hick, H-I-C-K. The television show The Beverly Hillbillies was about a family called the Clampett family, who originally was from not the Appalachian Mountains, but another set of mountains more in the central part of the U.S. called the Ozark Mountains in the state of Arkansas. Arkansas is where former U.S. President Bill Clinton was from. In the show, the Clampett family has a father whose name is Jed, a grandmother, Jed's wife's mother, Ellie Mae, a teenage daughter, and Jethro Bodine, who is Jed's cousin's teenage son. Jed is a very kind man in the show, and the granny, the grandmother, is very wise. The daughter, Ellie Mae, is a beautiful woman, but a little bit innocent. That is, she doesn't really understand the way the world works. The cousin, Jethro, is arrogant. Someone who is arrogant, A-R-R-O-G-A-N-T, thinks he is more important or knows more than he really does. One day, Jed, the father of the family, is out hunting and discovers or finds oil on the land owned by the family. Oil, in this case, refers to the black liquid found in the earth that is used for energy or as an energy source and is, of course, very valuable. Jed soon sells his land for millions of dollars, and someone suggests that he move to California with his family to have a better life, specifically to one of the richest areas in Los Angeles, Beverly Hills. I say one of the richest areas of Los Angeles, but in fact, Beverly Hills is its own city. It is a city that is next to the city of Los Angeles. In any case, Beverly Hills has the reputation for being one of the wealthiest or richest cities in Southern California, and there have been lots of movies and TV shows made about Beverly Hills. You may have seen the movies from the 1980s Beverly Hills Cop and Beverly Hills Cop 2, as well as the television show Beverly Hills 90210 is the zip code or postal code for Beverly Hills. So you can understand the title of the show, Beverly Hillbillies. They are hillbillies that move to Beverly Hills. The whole point of the show is, of course, to find comedy in this situation where you have a family who is not very well educated and isn't very sophisticated trying to live in the rich area of Beverly Hills. The Beverly Hillbillies, for some reason, was immediately successful with television audiences when it was first on the air or when it was first shown in 1962. It continued to be one of the most popular shows throughout the 1960s in the United States. It continued until 1971. In fact, when the show was canceled, when they stopped showing it in 1971, it was still popular. Why did they cancel the show? Some people say that beginning in the early 1970s, the television studios, the companies that make television shows, wanted to have more shows about people who were from the cities. They didn't want to have a lot of television shows about what we would call rural life. Rural, R-U-R-A-L, refers to people who don't live in a town or a large city. Because the population by the 1970s was mostly urban, that is, living in large cities, the television studios and networks decided they would purge or get rid of the shows that were about people from rural areas. I'm not sure how much that really was the case, but some people say that was one reason why the Beverly Hillbillies, among other shows, was canceled. You could still watch the Beverly Hillbillies in the 70s and 80s when I was growing up on television. They would show what are called reruns. A rerun, R-E-R-U-N, is an old television program that is shown again on TV. I won't say that the Beverly Hillbillies was one of the great television programs of the 20th century. It certainly wasn't that. But it was one of the most popular TV shows of the 1960s and certainly reflected a certain part of or aspect of American culture during the mid-20th century. Now let's answer some of the questions you have sent to us. Our first question comes from Shen Shen, Z-H-E-N-Z-H-E-N, in China. The question has to do with three words, lesson, lecture, and seminar. The word lesson, L-E-S-S-O-N, can have a couple of different meanings. A lesson can be an activity that a teacher does in a classroom in order to instruct or teach students a certain piece of information or a certain kind of knowledge. That can be a lesson. You could have more than one lesson in a single class, and usually do. A lesson could also be one period of time in a course of study in a school, whether it's a specific activity within a class period or the class period itself. The word lesson can be used to describe lots of different kinds of activities. A science teacher might have students doing experiments as part of the lesson. A history teacher may be giving information to students or having students read a book or an article and discuss it. That might be part of the lesson. So the word lesson can be used to describe lots of different kinds of activities from which we learn something. The word lesson is also used to describe something that we've learned in life, often from a difficult experience. Something has taught us a lesson, we say. In other words, we've learned something from a difficult situation. We didn't actually go to a teacher or try to learn something, but the fact that the situation was difficult gave us knowledge or gave us information that we consider important. And so we use that word lesson to describe the knowledge that we now have from that life situation. The term lecture, L-E-C-T-U-R-E, refers to a specific activity that often takes place in a lesson or as part of a lesson. A lecture is when the teacher or some other person stands up in front of a group of people and gives them information. I talk and you listen. That's what a lecture is. There's no discussion. There are no experiments. There's no reading of books or articles. A lecture is just you listening to the teacher speaking. The verb to lecture means to give a lecture, to give a lesson, to give information to someone who listens to you. To lecture can also be used as a verb to mean to criticize another person, to tell someone what he or she has done wrong. You may hear someone use the expression, "Don't lecture me." The person is saying, "Don't tell me what I am doing wrong. Don't criticize me or tell me the things that I have done wrong, ethically or morally or in terms of my behavior." So lecture in a school is something that the teacher does, giving information to students. Lecture in daily life refers to a person criticizing another person, telling the person what he did wrong and or what he should be doing. Finally, the word seminar, S-E-M-I-N-A-R, refers to a meeting either in school or in a business environment in which you are given information and training about a specific subject. You may go to a seminar to learn how to do certain accounting procedures for your business. Or you may go to a seminar about the latest government regulations that affect your particular company. The word seminar is used not just in the university or school setting, but also in a business setting to refer to a learning activity that is focused on one specific topic. At the university, the term seminar usually refers to a course that is taken by graduate students or more advanced undergraduate students. It's usually a class that has a small number of people in it, maybe 10 or 15 people. In the business world, a seminar could be a learning opportunity that involves hundreds of people. Seminar is now a term most often used in the business context, although if you are at a university, especially if you're a graduate student, you will see this term used to describe a small class where there are few people. In the business world, as I mentioned, seminar could refer to a large meeting of hundreds of people, but which is focused on one specific topic. Our second question comes from Ahmad, A-H-M-A-D, in Saudi Arabia. The question has to do with the difference between interesting and interested. One word ends in ing, one word ends in ed. Interesting is something that you want to know more about or want to be involved in, or simply something that attracts your attention. If something is described as interesting, it's the opposite of boring. It's something that you find attractive, something you want to know more about. Interesting usually describes the quality of a certain thing. You could find a movie interesting, or you might think that it is interesting to learn about the environment. The environment is what is interesting. Notice that the word interesting, the adjective, is describing the thing or object you want to know more about or find attractive. There's another adjective, interested, that means wanting to know more about something, but is used to describe a person. I am interested in knowing more about this film. I am interested in astronomy. She is interested in me. She finds me attractive. I don't know why, but she does. So in this case, interested is always something that describes what a person is feeling or what a person is thinking or what a person is desiring. There's a special case in which the adjective interested is used to mean involved or concerning. It's usually used this way together with the word party or parties in a legal discussion or document. If we talk about the interested parties, we're talking about people who are involved in a certain legal situation or a legal agreement. The word party or parties describes people, not a celebration in this case. But that's somewhat of a limited or specific use of interested. In general conversation, it's used to describe a person who has an interest in or an attraction to a certain thing or person. So you could even say, I am interested in her because I think she is interesting. I hope she is interested in me and finds me interesting. Notice in those sentences that interesting can describe a thing or a quality of a person, whereas interested describes a person who wants knowledge about another thing or person. If you say, I am interesting, you are saying that other people will find you attractive or want to know more about you. If you say, I am interested, you mean that you have a desire to know about another person or another thing. That's an interesting question. I hope you were interested in my answer. Finally, Alexander, A-L-E-X-A-N-D-R-E, from Brazil, wants to know the meaning of an expression which also comes from the legal world, I rest my case. A case here is an argument in front of a judge or in a legal context. For example, if the police arrest you, they will bring you in front of a judge, and the government lawyer will try to convince the judge that you are guilty, that you did something wrong. You are involved in a legal case. Really, the word case means argument for or against a certain position. The government has its case, and you try to argue something else. You are arguing against the government's case, against their position. In this case, in a courtroom in front of a judge, the lawyers, when they are finished with their arguments, when they are finished making their cases, making their positions known, stop at the end and say, I rest my case. I rest my case means I am done arguing my position. I am finished talking. In everyday English, someone may use that expression, I rest my case, either to be a little bit funny after they have finished presenting their position or presenting their ideas in an argument, or in a situation where they are arguing a certain point with another person and are saying, I am now finished presenting the evidence or the proof of why I am right, of why my position is correct. It's often done in a somewhat humorous way. You are using a very formal statement from a legal setting and applying it in an everyday situation where you are discussing your opinion or giving your evidence about a certain position that you hold. If I were to say that Minnesota is the best state in the United States, I might describe why I think that's true. I might give you my evidence. We have more than 10,000 lakes. We have given the world wonderful musicians like Bob Dylan and Prince. We have produced wonderful politicians, or at least famous politicians. I could say all of this is evidence that Minnesota is in fact the best state in the United States. I rest my case. I'm now done giving you the facts as I see them of why my position is correct. If you have a question or comment, you can email us. We're certainly interested in hearing your questions. Our email address is eslpod@eslpod.com. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. Thank you for listening. Come back and listen to us again right here on The English Cafe.
The podcast English Cafe was written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan and Dr. Lucy Faye.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by the Center for Educational Development.